Welcome to Policy 360 Unplugged.
Today I'm delighted to welcome Professor Katie Hayward from the School of Social Sciences, Education and Social Work at Queen's University, Belfast. Enjoy.
Katie, thank you so much for agreeing to do this podcast. I think it's wonderful and your work is wonderful as well. I was wondering if you could maybe tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and the work that you have been doing.
Thanks for having me on, Ellen. So, I'm a professor of political sociology in Queen's. My background work was on the impact of European integration on the island of Ireland, north and south, particularly in relation to the border. And then obviously in light of Brexit, I realised that this research could have some use in trying to explain the potential impact of Brexit. And so I engaged more widely with the wider community, different NGOs, local authorities, expert organisations and businesses, in sort of a two-way process of gathering information and then using the knowledge that I have of the way that the European Union works to try and inform what was happening at those highest levels that had such an impact and consequence for Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, Brexit, we're still talking about it, and we still don't seem to have an answer as to what's going to happen. You've extensive experience in terms of researching and advising on Brexit. What do you see as some of the key challenges, especially for charities, if they want to try and make an impact at that EU level? Obviously, we've got charities that work at MLA level, council level, and some at Westminster, but if they want to make an impact at EU level, how would they go about that?
So in terms of the challenge, I mean, first and foremost, it's complex, and I think it's the complexity of it all that really puts people off. And if I try and explain, there's sort of three main ways in which the people can have an influence, or at least try and respond to the Brexit relevant impacts that they are aware of. So we have the withdrawal agreement, and we know that particularly in Northern Ireland in relation to the Protocol on Ireland, Northern Ireland, now known as the Windsor Framework. So this is the very particular arrangements that affect Northern Ireland. And we know it relates to the Irish Sea border, but it also relates to Article 2. So the protection of individual rights, equalities and safeguards under the agreement that's overseen by the so-called dedicated mechanism, the Equality Commission, the Northern Ireland Human Rights Commission. So there's a lot of relevance to the community voluntary sector, to the charity sector in Northern Ireland by this withdrawal agreement. So under that withdrawal agreement, there are several bodies overseeing it. And what is really important is that both the UK and the EU recognise the voice of Northern Ireland. And this comes in a limited way from the Assembly, as we've seen exercised recently with the applicability motion debate that the DUP led on recently. But actually, there's something quite exciting for the community and voluntary sector there. And that is that the UK and EU have said that they will hear and communicate directly with Northern Ireland society on withdrawal agreement related matters or Windsor Framework related matters. This is fundamentally through the Commission's commitment to directly engage with such as the Northern Ireland Business Brexit Working Group and with something that we've called the Northern Ireland Civic Working Group on the Protocol that we're currently in the process of revamping and widening out to meet these new challenges of the Windsor Framework. So we can talk more about that. But just to say, so under the Windsor Framework, there are very particular ways by which we in Northern Ireland can directly engage with the UK and the EU. There's also the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. So that's that future relationship, the new relationship that the UK agreed with the EU. And again, there are means by which the UK and the EU can hear directly from civil society. So these are called the domestic advisory groups, the DAGs. So the EU always has a DAG when it has a trade agreement. It's not a very pleasant sounding name, but anyway, Northern Ireland's unique because we can access that both through Ireland, through the EU DAG, and through the UK DAG. And I can talk more about that. But also, but they have a civil society forum as well. And the purpose of that civil society forum that only meets once a year is to bring together UK-EU civil society voices to say to those two big organisations, this is how your new relationship is affecting us. So again, there's means of direct communication there, and they want to hear the impact that the TCA is having. And then last but not least, and possibly the most complicated, is the continued evolution of the EU. That does continue to affect Northern Ireland because of the Windsor framework. And so when you say, how can we impact sort of the EU policy development area that may be relevant to Northern Ireland, this is where actually some recognition of Northern Ireland's unique place has come forward. And we see this in the fact that the EU has made the provision that the so-called Have Your Say platform for EU citizens is open to Northern Ireland as well. So if you're aware of a particular area of policy, maybe in relation to, it might be relevant to Article 2, for example, in relation to, say, employment rights, or in relation to environmental protection, whatever it might be, if you see the development of an EU policy, you can have your say through the EU platform. And also unique to Northern Ireland is the possibility of using the means by which the EU hears directly from civil society, primarily the Economic and Social Committee, and that they too are open to hearing directly from Northern Ireland. So there's a UK EU follow-up committee or subcommittee in the Economic and Social Committee. Sorry, there's a lot of committees, but the Economic and Social Committee, the EESC, is there to hear directly from civil society. And they too, as I say, that UK EU follow-up committee, they too want to hear directly from Northern Ireland. So even though it's a complicated pattern whereby we're dealing with a divorce, a future relationship, and then continued evolution, actually in all of those areas there is recognition of Northern Ireland's unique place and a willingness to hear directly from Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I actually didn't realise there. You're talking about the Civic Society Forum, the DAGs that have your Say EU platform. That is a lot of opportunities then for charities to actually submit their views and also case studies as to what is happening within the local area in which they operate.
Yes, so they do want to hear. And I think this is why, if you take a couple of steps back, all the drama about the protocol, which made people even more cautious about engaging in that Brexit debate or getting into the public sphere on that. But actually, what that did do was create a situation in which the EU in particular became aware of how little it knew about Northern Ireland. So, and how you need to hear directly from stakeholders. Now, part of that was on businesses and the nature of trade, but also they recognised the sensitivities in Northern Ireland, not just sort of nationalist and unionist, but also the very the very particular complexities of society here. And so the EU committed to that direct stakeholder engagement. It began to do it on an ad hoc basis, engaging particularly with human rights organisations and others, but then it wanted to establish that more formally. Now this is a tricky process, because in so doing it's going beyond what it's ever done with any other third country. And so there's this complex balance, and we're not there yet, it's in process, of saying we want to hear directly from you, but because we realise you're in a unique position, but we don't want to give you more privileges than member states have. So it is a bit of a balance, but at the same time, we have it in black and white in the Windsor framework from both the UK and the EU, we want to hear directly from stakeholders in Northern Ireland. And there are some mechanisms there that are cautiously being developed at the moment. And I would be confident if you and I have this conversation in a year's time, be able to give much more information on how that direct engagement can happen. But we have the commitments there and they are beginning to evolve. I should say the Northern Ireland Executive Office in Brussels does fantastic work, and they have incredible networks. They're highly respected, and if charitable organisations want to have concerns maybe about EU policy, if they have particular issues they want to raise, make sure the Northern Ireland Executive Office in Brussels is aware, and they can link you in to the relevant part of the EU or to make sure this issue is raised appropriately. But they would give advice on where you might go to advocate for your particular position or to explain the potential implications of a policy.
That's very helpful. I was wondering, you were saying that, you know, it's a fine balance in terms of how they're going to engage with civil society in Northern Ireland. And a lot of the media and attention has really been on trade and the barriers to trade. Do you think awareness raising needs to take place if there are all these mechanisms to engage at the moment and further down the line? And how can they get that message out?
So this is a thing we go round and round with, Ellen, if I'm honest with you. So it's the UK-EU recognition of the need for that direct engagement, the fact that they need to know how this is going down here on the ground, how it's being experienced, and also we on the ground need to know what they're thinking and doing up there. So it's mutually beneficial. But it's tricky because we're not in the EU, but we're still following a portion of EU law. So it is very unique. And we have the commitments, but as it begins to get formalised, there is caution about that. And there's this sort of balance between absolute publicity and transparency around this and building trust. And that trust, as you know, is all important. So it's trust that they can share information and we can share information with them that is useful, and it's them maintaining, like the Commission maintaining trust with the various member states, that it's not going behind their back or doing anything that the member states wouldn't be comfortable with a third country, i.e. with part of the UK. So this is why this next process of beginning to develop those structures that they promised us. So the promise was we can have direct engagement from Northern Ireland with each level of the governance of the withdrawal agreement, i.e. the Joint Committee, which is a political dynamic. David Cameron is on that at the moment. For example, with Mara Shefcovic, you have the Specialised Committee, which is officials who really oversee the day-to-day running of the Windsor Framework. And then you have the so-called Joint Consultative Working Group, which we don't need to worry about, but that's like the real technical detail. So they promised us engagement at every level, and this is great. As that begins to get fleshed out in practice, this is the balance that we need to get. So maintaining trust, make sure it's effective, make sure people know that this is happening so that they can input into it as needs be. But as I say, these are being developed, and there's a number of sort of organisations that are involved, like for example the sort of the Brexit Human Rights Working Group, sort of people that you would, organisations that you would know, the Equality Coalition for example, that are in there helping shape the nature of these structures for engagement. And then they can communicate more widely with their networks as to what's happening.
Yeah, that's very helpful to know. And I suppose it is a fine balance because we're not part of the EU, but yet they do want to hear from us because mm-hmm. they recognise that unique relationship that we have, but also they've other member states to keep happy. I mean, it must be a nightmare in terms of bureaucracy.
With the EU, surprisingly enough, yeah.
One of the other things that I wanted to touch on was the topic of Brexit, and it's a topic that really gets people exercised. And do you get a sense sometimes that people don't want to engage with it because of that? You talked a little bit before about the reluctance to understand it and stuff, so perhaps that might be a reason. Would you agree?
Yes, I mean, the funny thing is now it's more and more important. So the unique position of Northern Ireland, you know, it's very peculiar position, and it is highly idiosyncratic, the Windsor framework, and what it means in practice. I mean, this is going to be very difficult to navigate. Now, there are opportunities, etc., but there are also very significant challenges. And actually, now in practice, we're going to need knowledge and expertise and an ability to get information to inform, to scan the horizon and say this is potentially going to be significant down the line. So it's a new level of policy awareness that we're going to need, being outside of those normal processes that we had before of engagement with the EU. So just as it becomes, as people would think, gosh, we're so many years after the referendum, we can kind of forget about that now. In actual fact, this is where it's going to become significant. The hope would be, I guess, that it would become less politically divisive and sensitive, and therefore a kind of a pragmatism can come into play. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. Given that actually it does remain so politically sensitive, and a lot of the way that the UK government has sought to reassure people in Northern Ireland, particularly unionists, has actually been in a funny way to slightly politicise it as well. So the mechanisms that are meant to be about democratic say in Northern Ireland, you know, the need for cross-community consent, etc., you're sort of making it a community issue. Hopefully, if we can get to a situation where there's an acceptance of the Windsor framework and a wish to improve it for the benefit of Northern Ireland as a whole, then you can have a situation whereby information is more readily shared. And we have been in a really strange situation whereby businesses, community organisations will be asking for information on something, and it hasn't been readily shared because it's been seen as politically sensitive. Not because it necessarily is, but because it relates to the Windsor framework. So if we can move it beyond that, then that would be a huge step forward. I give you the example of parcels, for example. So there will be some new rules coming into play with respect to parcels. The way to minimise the disruption caused by these new rules would be to inform people about them in advance. But still, there's a caution from the government in saying these new rules are going to be coming into play. So, you know, you're sort of making the problem is going to be much worse because people weren't properly prepared. So that will be a test. This is going to come into play from the 1st of October. That'll be a bit of a test. Can information be shared without it being seen as hugely controversial?
That is such a tightrope to walk along. It would be great if we could get beyond that and be more pragmatic mm-hmm. about it, especially if we want to improve things, and especially for charities, we want to improve things for people on the ground and what's happening in their lives. You talked a little bit there about sort of scanning the horizon, and we need to look differently at it. Do you think we have that knowledge and that desire to be able to think beyond the political and have that proper sort of relationship to ensure that things do improve here?
Absolutely, and this is why I think the EU in particular, I'm thinking of the Commission, but also members of the European Parliament, why they were so keen to say that they wanted that direct engagement to become more structured, because in that period, the first sort of 21, 22, when they did directly engage, they realised how impactful Brexit and the Windsor Framework was on Northern Ireland and the ramifications of it, and how specific and articulate and compelling charitable organisations could be in explaining the impact. And so this is the thing. It's very different to business, you know, you're sort of presenting evidence of, you know, potential costs, adaptation, etc., etc. But in wider civic society, it's obviously goes beyond the particularities of specific articles or directives. But in such engagement, I think they realised if we don't get this right, or if we, even in the phrasing of something or in the press releases or some language used, you can have very negative effects. So I think they recognised that such engagement was worthwhile, and therefore being willing to show to be innovative in this way. This is something that is wholly new, and in the engagement the EU has with civic society at the moment in development of legislation, namely most particularly the Economic and Social Committee, it's very structured. It recognises the importance of that voice, but it's within a particular place. This is rather more different what it's wanting to do from Northern Ireland, and even just to hear the voices in Northern Ireland. So recognising that, that information needs to go two ways. It's not just them telling us this is going to happen, but it's sort of learning from potential impact here.
It's lovely to hear that. It's almost as if you're describing that, you know, charities have had an impact with their case studies and saying what's happening on the ground at the EU level, and because of that they're trying to actually do something. I mean, that's how it should be.
Yes, absolutely. And it's been like, so I have been involved in some of those meetings and things, and it's been a real privilege. There's something really special when obviously when there's the mutual understanding is improved. So and as I say, I've seen it with MEPs and with commission officials and others, and it's really wonderful, you know. So because obviously Brussels is far away, and the whole chain of EU legislative development, etc., just as it is in the Dáil or in Westminster, is very complicated and can seem so removed from the actual impact on the ground. And so when people have been able to say, you know, I was speaking today, you know, somebody was on the phone to me today, facing the prospect of losing their job because of the cuts of the European Social Fund, for example, that kind of just has an impact. Of course it does. And so the fact that that went forward into the step of saying we want to create the structures for directly hearing from Northern Ireland is really significant, I think.
Most definitely. I want to ask you about what do you think, or what you would like to see 12, 18 months down the line, based on everything that you've said? Because I think there's certainly positive steps and positive things happening.
Ideally, we would be able to, people would have like a map So knowing this, in this area of policy and legislation, the EU is relevant to this degree, and if we wanted to, if we were concerned about a potential impact or a challenge coming up, that we would know exactly how to make our voices heard. And the route will not always be direct. In fact, it very rarely would be, unless you use that have your say thing. So they would know who to contact, or which umbrella organisations would be there to relay that. And as I say, this process is developing, and I'm hopeful, if not confident, that we will get there. So to such a degree that it's something that we can be proud of and use to our advantage in Northern Ireland, and that politicians and officials, as well as those in the wider civic society and these organisations, can share, share information about and encourage use of.
That is fantastic. And with that, I'll finish. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Policy 360 Unplugged. I hope this episode provided you with valuable insights and a deeper understanding of how you can influence policy. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast. Your support is much appreciated. Until next time.